is the society. A monster dripping in decadence, yet seeing none of his own hypocrisy. He views all this wealth, all this power, as his right. He is deluded. They all are. But I cannot cut him down from the front. No, no matter how well I fight. He is too strong. His razor hangs from his hand like a snake. With the press of a button it'll go rigid, a meter in length. His armor shines. Morning breaks as we face one another. A smile splits his lips.
You would have been something in my house. But you are a little stupid boy, angry and of House Mars. You cannot yet kill like I can, yet you challenge me. Pure rage, pure stupidity.
No, I can't challenge you. I toss my sling blade down at his feet and throw my razor with it. I can barely use the razor anyway.
So I'll cheat, I nod. Go ahead, Severo.
The razor slithers up from the ground, stiffens, and goes through Jupiter's hamstrings as he wheels about. His slash goes 2 feet too high. He's used to fighting men. Invisible, Severo wounds Jupiter's arms and takes the man's weapons. The recoil armor flows into the wounds to stop their bleeding, but the tendons will need real work. When Jupiter is silent, Severo winks off Apollo's ghost cloak. We take Jupiter's weapons. His armor wouldn't have fit anyone except Pax. Poor Pax. He would have looked dashing in all this finery. We drag Jupiter back up the slope. Inside, the tide of the battle has shifted. My scouts, it seems, have found what I told them to seek. Melia runs up to me, a content grin on her long face. Her voice, as ever, is a low drawl when she tells me the good news.
We found their armory.
A host of Venus House members, only just freed from slavery, thunders past. Their pulse fists and recoil armor shimmer. Olympus is ours, and Mustang has been found. Now we have all the access.
Chapter 43. The Last Test. I find her asleep in a suite beside Jupiter's own. Her golden hair is wild, her cloak dirtier than my own. It hangs brown and grey, not white. She smells like smoke and hunger. She's destroyed the room, upturned a dish of food, buried her dagger into the door. The brown and pink servants are scared of her, and me. I watch them skitter away. My distant cousins. I see them move, alien things, like ants, so void of emotion. I feel a pang. Perspective is a wicked creature. This is how Augustus saw Io as he killed her. An ant. No. He called her a red bitch. She was like a dog in his eyes.
The food was laced with something, I ask one of the pinks. The beautiful boy murmurs something, looking at the ground.
Speak like a man, I bark.
Sedatives, Lord.
He does not look at me. I don't blame him. I'm a gold, a foot taller, worlds stronger. And I look positively insane. How wicked he must think me. I tell him to go away. Hide. My army does not always listen when I tell them not to toy with low colours. The bed is grand. Sheets of silk, mattress of feathers. Posts of ivory, ebony and gold. Mustang sleeps on the floor in the corner. For so long we have had to hide where we sleep. It must have felt so wrong, lying in perfect comfort, even with sedatives in her. She tried breaking the windows, too. I'm glad she didn't. It's a far drop. I sit beside her. The breath from her nose stirs a single coil of hair.
How many times I've watched her sleep with a fever. How many times she's done the same. But there's no fever now. No cold. No pain in my stomach. Cassius's wound has healed. Winter has ended. Outside I saw the first of the flowers blossoming. I picked one on the mountainside. It's in the hidden compartment of my cloak. I want to give it to Mustang. Want to wake her with the himanthus by her lips. But when I take it out, a dagger slips into my heart, worse than any metal blade. Io. The pain will never go away. I don't know if it's supposed to. I don't know if this guilt I feel is owed. I kissed the himanthus and took it away. Not yet. Not yet. I wake Mustang gently. Her smile spreads before she even opens her eyes, as though she knows I am beside her. I say her name and brush the hair from her face. Her eyes flutter open. Golden flakes spiral there in the irises. So strange, next to my calloused, dirty fingers with their cracked nails. She nuzzles my hand and manages to sit up. A yawn. She looks around. I almost laugh as I see her digest what has happened. Well, I was going to tell you about a dream I had about dragons. They were purple and pretty and liked to sing songs. She flicks my armor with a finger. It rings. Way to upstage me. Jerk. What happened?
I got mad. She groans.
I've become the maiden in distress, haven't I? Slag. I hate those girls.
I tell her the news. The jackal is split. His forces besiege Mars as he and Lilith hide in the deep mountains. We'll be able to find him easily. If you want, you can take our army and root the bastard out.
Done, she smirks and raises an eyebrow. But can you trust me? Maybe I'll want to be big primus of this weird army.
I can trust you.
How do you know? She says again. This is when I kiss her. I cannot give her the himanthus. That is my heart, and it is of Mars, one of the only things born from the red soil. And it is still Io's. But this girl, when they took her, I would have done anything to see her smirking again. Perhaps one day I'll have two hearts to give. She tastes how she smells, smoke and hunger. We do not pull apart. My fingers wend through her hair. Hers trace along my jaw, my neck, and scrape along the back of my scalp.
There is a bed. There is time. And there's a hunger different from when I first kissed Io. But I remember when the Gamma Hell Diver, Dago, took a deep pull from his burner, turning it bright but dead in a few quick moments. He said, "This is you." I know I am impetuous, rash. I process that. And I am full of many things: passion, regret, guilt, sorrow, longing, rage. At times they rule me. But not now. Not here. I wound up hanging on a scaffold because of my passion and sorrow. I ended up in the mud because of my guilt. I would have killed Augustus at first sight because of my rage. But now, I am here. I know nothing of the Institute's history, but I know I have taken what no one else has taken. I took it with anger and cunning, with passion and rage. I won't take Mustang the same way. Love and war are two different battlefields. So, despite the hunger, I pull away from Mustang. Without a word, she knows my mind, and that's how I know it's in the right. She darts one more kiss into me. It lingers longer than it should, and then we stand together and leave. We hold hands till the door. Then I turn to her.
Fetch me the Jackal's standard, Mustang.
Yes, Lord Reaper.
She gives a mock bow and a little wink. Then she is gone. The place is a madhouse of looting. In all the chaos, Severo has found the holotransmitter. It has our sensorial experiences stored in its hard drives and is cued to send them back to the drafters wherever they may be. It is not a streaming feed, so the drafters do not yet have today's events. There is a half-day delay. That is all it will take. I give Severo instructions and have him get to work splicing out the story I want told. I would trust no one else. I have Fichtner brought up from Castle Apollo's dungeons. He reclines in a chair in Olympus's dining hall. His face is purple from when I hit him. The floor is made of condensed air, so we are suspended above a mild vertical drop. His feet are on the table, and his mouth twists into a smile. "There's the manic boy," he calls, fingering his chin. "I knew I liked your odds." I give him a greeting with my middle finger. "Liar." He returns the finger. "Turd." He reaches for my hand. "Don't tell me you're still bitter about the poisoning, the sicknesses, the setup with Cassius, the bears in the woods, the shitty tech, the terrible weather, the assassination attempts, the spy."
"The spy?"
"Messing with you. Ha! Still a child. Speaking of which, where are your soldiers? Running around eating themselves stupid, showering, sleeping, screwing, playing with the pinks. This place is a honey trap, my boy. A honey trap that will make your army worthless."
"You're in a better mood."
"My son is safe," he says with a wink. "Now, what are you up to?"
"I already sent Mustang to deal with the Jackal, and after this, I go to House Mars. Then it will all be over."
"Ooh! Except it won't be." Fichtner pops a familiar gum bubble and winces.
I did a number on his jaw. It makes me laugh.
I felt like laughing since Severo took down Jupiter. My leg throbs with pain from that blasted man. Even with the painkillers, I can hardly walk.
"No riddles. Why isn't it over?"
"Three things," Fichtner says. His hatchet face examines me for a moment. "You're a peculiar creature. You and the Jackal both. Everyone always wants to win, but you two stand apart. Freaks. Goals won't die to win. We value our lives too much. You two don't. Where did it come from?" I remind him he's my prisoner, and he should answer my questions. "Three things are not finished. Here's what's what. I'll tell you what they are if you answer my question. What drives you?" He sighs. "The first thing, good man, is Cassius. He will simply have to duel you until one of you little sods keels over and dies."
I was afraid of that.
I answer Fichtner's question. I tell him the Jackal wanted to know the same thing, what drives me. The write-off answer is rage. From point to point, it is rage. If something happens, and if I was not anticipating it, I react like an animal, with violence. But the deep spine answer is love. Love drives me. So I must lie a bit to him. My mother had a dream that I could be greater than anyone in my family. Greater than the name Andromedus. The name of my father. Fake father. Fake family. Point still the same. I am not a Bellona. Not an Augustus. Not an Octavia Auloon. I smile wickedly, something he can appreciate. But I want to be able to stand above them and piss on all their gory damn heads. Fichtner likes that. He's always wanted the same, but he's found that without the pedigree, merit takes you only so far. That frustration is his condition. The second thing that is not finished is this. Fichtner waves his hands about. I got the crust of this deal. He's making no revelations. I killed a proctor. I have evidence that the arch-governor bribed others and threatened more so that his child could win. Nepotism. Manipulation of the sacred school. This is not idle news. It will shatter something, perhaps even remove the arch-governor from office. Charges. Punishment. The drafters will want blood.
And the arch-governor will want yours. This will embarrass him, and potentially make room for a Bellona arch-governor. Maybe Cassius's father.
Fitchner asks me why I trust the soldiers in my army, who are slaves. They trust me because they've seen how they would have done in all this had I not come along. You think they want the jackal as their master?
Good, Fitchner says. You trust them all. Splendid! Then there is no third complication. My mistake.
I press him for what he means. So he sighs and relents.
Oh, only that you sent Mustang and half the army to deal with the jackal.
And?
It's really nothing. You trust her.
No, tell me, what do you mean?
Well, fine. If you must know, if there's simply no other way of going about it, she is the jackal's twin sister.
Virginia Al Augustus, sister to the jackal. Twin, an heir of the great family, the gens Augusta, the only daughter of Arch-Governor Nero Al Augustus, the man who made all this happen. Kept cloistered and out of the public eye to ward off assassination attempts, just like her brother. That's why Cassius didn't know the daughter of his family's arch-rival. But when I sat with the jackal, Mustang knew who he was. Her brother. Had she known before of the jackal's identity? Nothing can explain her silence if she knew who he was and said nothing. Nothing except for family. Which is a loyalty above friendship, above love, above a kiss in the corner of a room. I have sent half my army to the jackal. I have given him recoil armor, grav boots, ghost cloaks, razors, pulse weapons, enough tech for him to take Olympus. Damn it! The proctors all know. And when I pass them at a run, they are laughing. They laugh. At my stupidity. The rage grows inside of me. I want to kill something. I marshal my forces. They are spread throughout the castle, eating its food, taking its pleasures. Fools! Fools! My best are where I need them. Severo left to his work. That is the most important thing. I order Tactus to hunt down the remnants of Venus and Mercury in the southern lowlands and enslave them. I set Milia out to marshal the rest of my army with Nyla. I need to go to House Mars now. I cannot wait for my soldiers to assemble. I need fresh bodies, because when the Augustus twins come, they will have weapons and technology to match mine, and they may have more soldiers. The game has changed. I did not prepare for this. I feel a fool. How could I have kissed her? My heart is swallowed by darkness. What if I had given her the Himanthus? I tear it to ribbons as I jump from the edge of Mount Olympus in my grav boots and let the petals fall. I take only the howlers with me, passing the petals as we soar down. We wear grav boots and armor and carry pulse fists and pulse blades. The snow in the land of House Mars is gone. Muddy soil churned by the feet of invaders replaces it. The highlands are swaddled in mist. The smell is of earth and siege. Our towers, Phobos and Deimos, are rubble. The catapults gifted to the besiegers have done their work there. So too have they made progress on the walls of my old castle. The front facade is in ruin and strewn with arrows, broken pottery from pitch jars, swords, armor, and some students. Nearly 100 strong besiege Mars. Their camp is near the tree line, but an enclosing fence has been built around Mars Castle to prevent any sallies from the fortress. It has been a long winter for both sides, though I note the solar cooking pots, the portable heaters, the nutrition packets of the jackal's besieging force.
comprised of Jupiter, Apollo, and a quarter of House Pluto. Several crosses stand high at the bottom of the slope. They face the castle. On the crosses are three bodies. Crows tell me their state. The only sign of resistance I see from House Mars is our flag, the Wolf of Mars, tattered and scorched. It hangs slack in the poor wind. The Howlers and I come from the sky like golden gods. Our ragged cloaks flap behind us, but if the besiegers expected us to be proctors bringing more gifts, they could not have been more mistaken. We land hard on the earth, the Howlers first, and I land at their head, and as I hit, the enemies scatter before me in utter terror. Reaper has come home. I let the Howlers make ruin of the enemies on our soil. This is as close as I've been to home, to Lycos, in months. I bend down and take a handful of House Mars's soil as my men do my work around me. Mars. Home. I have flown a different banner, but I have missed my house. Enemies run to attack me. They see my blade, know who I am. I walk impervious. My pulse armor is my shield. Severo and the Howlers act as my sword. I walk to the three crosses and peer up to see Antonia, Cassandra, and Vixus. The betrayers. What did they do now? Antonia is still alive, as is Vixus. Barely. I have Thistle cut them down and take them back to Olympus for the medbots. They will have to live with the knowledge that they slit Leah's throat. I hope it hurts them. I stand for a moment at the bottom of the hill. I call up to tell them who I am. But they already know, because the flag of Mars comes down, and in its place is raised a soiled bedsheet with a hastily drawn sling blade arching across. "The Reaper!" they cry, as I am their salvation. "Primus!" The defenders are ragged, dirty, and thin. Some are so weak we have to carry them from the rubble of the castle. Those who can come to salute me, or tip their heads, or kiss my cheeks. Those who cannot touch my hand as I pass. There are broken legs and crushed arms. They will be mended. We ferry them back to Olympus. House Mars will not be useful in the coming battle, so I will use besiegers from Pluto, Jupiter, and Apollo. I have Clan and Pebble enslave them all with the standard of Mars. A thin boy, I hardly recognize, delivers it to me. But when he grabs me in a skeletal embrace, a hug so hard it hurts, I know who he is. A silent sob echoes in my chest. He is quiet as he hugs me. Then his body shudders like Pax's did as he met death. Except these shudders come from joy, not pain. Roke lives. "My brother," he sobs. "My brother. I thought you were dead," I tell him, as I clutch his delicate frame. "Roke, I thought you were dead." I clasp him to me. His hair is so thin. I feel his bones through his clothing. He's like a wet rag around my armor. "Brother," he says, "I knew you would come back. I knew it in my heart. This place was hollow without you." He grins at me with such pride. "How you now fill it." The Primus of House Diana was right. House Mars is a wildfire. And it does starve. Roke has scars on his face. He shakes his head, and I know he has stories to tell. Where he was, how he came back. But later, he limps away. Quinn, one-eared and tired, goes with him. She mouths a thank you, and puts her hand along the small of the thin poet's back, in a manner that lets me know she's left Cassius. "He told us you would return," she says. "Roke never lies." Pollux is still humorous when I see him.
His voice is gravel, and he clasps my arm. Quinn and Roke kept the house together, he says. Cassius gave up a long while ago. He waits for me in the war room.
Don't kill him, please. It ate his mind up, man. Ate it all up, what he did to you. We all found out. So just let him get some time away from this place, man. It does things to your head. Makes you forget we don't have a choice.
Pollux kicks a piece of mud.
The bastards put me in with a little girl, you know.
In the passage.
Matched me with a little girl. I tried to kill her softly, but she wouldn't die.
Pollux grunts something and claps me on the shoulder. He tries a sour chuckle.
We've got it raw, but at least we're not Reds. You register?
Righto. He leaves, and I'm alone in my old castle. Titus died on the spot where I stand. I look at the keep. It's worse now than it was in his time. Everything is worse now, somehow.
Bloody slag.
Why did Mustang have to betray me? Everything is dark, now that I know. A shadow cast over life. She could have told me, so many times. But she never did. I know she wanted to speak with me when I was with the Jackal, but likely just to tell me something idle, some tidbit. Or would she betray her blood for me?
No.
If she would have done that, then she would have told me before I gave her half my army. She took her standard, too. And Ceres's.
Why did she need so many, except to make war with me?
It feels like she killed Io. It feels like she put the noose there and I jerked the feet. She is her father's daughter. I feel that little snap go through my hands. I've betrayed Io. I spit on the stones. My mouth is dry. Haven't had anything to drink all morning. My head aches. Time to drop my balls, as Uncle Nerol used to say. Time to see Cassius.
He sits with his iron blade out on House Mars's table. He's in the seat I carved with my sigil. The old house flag lies across his knee.
The Primus hand dangles around his neck. So much time has passed since he put that sword in my belly. The weapon looks silly now. A toy. A relic. I am so far past this room, past his blade, past his reach. Yet his eyes stop my heart. The guilt is like black bile in my throat, fills my chest, and drains me. I'm sorry for Julian, I tell him. His hair is golden curls, but matted with grit and grease. Fleas make their home there. He is still beautiful, still more handsome than I ever will be. But I am the greater man. The spark in his eye has cooled. Time and space away from this place are what his soul needs. Months of siege, months of anger and defeat, months of loss and guilt have drained him of all that makes him Cassius. What a poor soul. I feel sorry for him. I almost laugh. After he put a sword in my belly, I pity him. He has never lost a battle. He alone, of all the Primuses, can say that. Yet he takes the badge and flips it to me.
You've won. But was it worth it?
Cassius asks.
Yes. No hesitation. He nods. That's the difference between you and me.
He sets the standard and his sword down, and walks close to me, so close I can smell the stink of his breath. I think he's going to hug me. I want to hug him, to apologize and beg for his forgiveness. Then he pulls open a scab on his knuckles, sucks the blood from it, and spits in my face, startling me.
"This is a blood feud,"
he hisses in high lingo.
"If ever again we meet, you are mine or I am yours. If ever again we draw breath in the same room, one breath shall cease. Hear me now, you wretched worm. We are devils to one another till one rots in hell."
It is a formal, cold declaration that requires one thing of me. I nod, and he leaves. I stand trembling for a moment after he's gone. My heart thuds in my chest. So much pain. I had thought it would be over. But not all scars heal. Not all sins are forgiven. I take the Mars flag and pin the Primus badge to myself. I watch the map on the wall. My Slingblade banner flutters over every castle there. My men secured the rest, even as Tactus makes ready Olympus for Mustang's assault. Now those castles belong to me, not to the wolf of House Mars. My Slingblade looks like the L of Lambda. My clan. The place where my brother, my sister, my uncle, my mother, my friends still toil. They feel a world apart. Yet their symbol, a symbol of our rebellion, a working tool made into a weapon for war, flies over all the houses of the Orient except one. Pluto. I leave the castle through the spire. I am a red Helldiver of Lycos. I am Gold Primus of House Mars. And I am going to my last battle in this bloody damn valley. After that, the real war begins. Chapter 44. Rise. Tactus has assumed command in my absence. The man is a cruel beast, but he's my cruel beast. And with him at my side, my forces are fit for bloodshed. Our armor glistens. 300 strong. 90 new slaves. They will not have a chance to earn their freedom. There were not enough grav boots for all, or enough armor, but everyone has something. The dead horses and the howlers group together near the edge of Mount Olympus. They stare down a thin arc of gold at the ground a mile below. Our adversaries are in the mountains. When Mustang and the Jackal come from the snow peaks, they will be at a disadvantage. We have the highest ground. The rest of my force, Pax's former squad and Nyla's, guard the Golden Fortress and the Proctors. The slaves are there as well. I wish Pax were at my side. I always felt safer in his shadow. I've sent Nyla and Milia and a dozen others in ghost cloaks to scout the mountains for the Jackal's movements. Who knows what intel Mustang has given her brother? He will know our weaknesses, our disposition, so I shift everything as much as possible. Whatever she knows will be useless. Alter the paradigm. I wonder if I could beat her as mercilessly as I beat Fichtner, the girl who hummed Io's song. Never. I'm still a red at heart. Hate this gory part, Tactus sighs. He leans his wiry body past me to peer out over the edge of the floating mountain. Waiting. Pfft. We need some optics.
What?
Optics, he says loudly. My hearing goes in and out. Popped eardrums are nasty things. He says something about Mustang and cutting our thumbs off for starters. I don't catch most of it. Probably don't want to. He's the sort to make braids of someone's entrails. There! Then we see a golden flyer pierce a cloud. Three more follow. Nyla. Milia. Mustang. And something else. Hold! I call to Severo and his howlers. They echo the command as Mustang approaches, carrying something odd. Lo Reaper! Mustang calls to me. I wait for her to land, Her boots bring her quickly to the ground. Low, Mustang.
So, Milia says you figured it out.
She looks around with a curious smile.
This must all be for me, then.
Of course. I'm confused. Thought there might be a scuffle between Augustus and Andromedus.
No scuffle this time. I brought you a gift. May I present my brother, Adrius Au Augustus, the Jackal of the Mountains, and his standard. And he's...
She looks at me with a hard smile as she realizes I thought she betrayed me.
Disarmed.
She drops the jackal, bound, gagged, and naked.
Bugger my gory balls,
Tactus hisses.
I have won.
Mustang stands beside me as the dropships come to Olympus. She's told me not to feel guilty about doubting her loyalty. She should have told me her family ties, even though she doesn't claim the jackal as her brother. Not in spirit. Her true brother, her older brother, was killed by one of Cassius's, a brute by the name of Carnus. Augustus and Bellona. The blood feud between the families runs deep, and I feel its riptide pulling at my legs. Yet the question remains, is Mustang her father's daughter, or is she the girl who hums Io's song? I think I know the answer. She is what gulls can be, should be, yet her father and brother are what gulls are. Io never would have guessed it could be this complicated. There is goodness in gulls, because in many ways they are the best humanity can offer, but they're also the worst. What does that do to her dream? Only time will tell. My lieutenants flank me. Mustang, Nyla, Milia, Tactus, Severo, even Roke and Quinn. We leave a space for Pax and Leah. My army flanks them. There is no need to embarrass the Pluto students. I want to, but I don't. They stand dispersed throughout my 6 units. We wait in a broad courtyard across from the landing pads. It is a spring day, and so the snow melts fast. Severo is near me. In his eye I see a subtle difference when he looks at me. The conversation we had when he finished editing the tapes was short and frightening. It echoes in my ears. The audio in the storm was scrambled, he said. Couldn't make out the last words you said to Apollo. So I deleted them. One of my last words was bloody damn. What does Severo know? What does he think he knows? The fact that he deleted it means he thinks it is important enough to cover up. Arch-Governor Augustus and the Imperators Bellona and Adriatus, and a host of other dignitaries to the sum of 200, come from the shuttles, each with a cadre of attendants. The director surveys us and laughs at the proctor's condition. I have left them bound and gagged. There is no pity here. Any worry I had at punishment is swept away. Only Fitchner stands unbound. If there are any rewards given to the proctors, he should reap them. They have seen the hollow experiences by now. Severo made sure they were good. He knew well the story I wanted told. I made only a few adjustments. Director Clintus is a small woman with a severe mountain peak of a face. She manages to crack a joke about this being the first time they've had the ceremony at so lofty a location, but she does think it will be the last. It is not the way the game is supposed to be played, yet it does speak to my creativity and cunning. She seems to like me very much, and affectionately refers to me as the Reaper. In fact, they all seem to like me very much, though some, I can tell, are wary. Rulers tend to dislike those who break rules.
The drafters of all the houses are clamouring to recruit you, my boy. You'll have a choice, though Mars has first offer. It will be up to you.
So many choices for the Reaper, Clintus titters.
Bellona and Augustus, blood enemies, both watch me as you would a snake. I killed one of their sons and embarrassed the others. I do believe this may become awkward.
There is little ceremony. The attendants bustle about. This is but formality. The true ceremony will take place in Aegea, where there will be a grand festival, a party to set fire to the heavens, and the hollow presence of the sovereign herself. Libations, dancers, racers, fire breathers, pleasure slaves, enhancers, spike dust, politicians, or so Mustang tells me. It seems strange to think others care about what happened to us here. Strange to think that so many of the Golds are vapid creatures. They know nothing of what it is to earn the mark of a peerless scard, to beat a boy to death in a cold room of stone. But they will celebrate us. For a moment, I forgot whom we were fighting for. I forgot this is a race that fights like hell to earn its frivolous things, because it loves those things so much. I don't understand that drive. I understand the Institute. I understand war. But I don't understand what is coming in Aegea, or what will come after that. Perhaps that's because I'm more like the Iron Gulls, the best of the peerless. Those like the ancestors, those who nuked a planet that rose against their rule. What a creature I've become. When all is said and done, Director Clintus pins some badge on me. She winks and touches my shoulder. Then we disperse. Just like that. The game is through, and we are told dropships are inbound for our departure to our own homes, where parents wait to give their approval or disown disappointing sons and daughters. Just like that. Until then, we mill about, feeling foolish in all our accumulated armor, all our weaponry that now means so little. I look at my slingblade and wonder how useless it has just become. It's as though we're supposed to congratulate one another, cheer or something. But there's only silence. A hollow silence for victors and losers, all. I am empty. What do I do now? There was always a fear, always a concern, always a reason to hoard weapons and food, always a quest or trial. Now, nothing. Just the wind sweeping in over our battlefield. An empty battlefield filled only with echoes of things lost and learned. Friends. Lessons. Soon it will be a memory. I feel like a lover has died. I yearn to cry. Feel hollow. Adrift. I look for Mustang. Will she still care for me? And then Arch-Governor Augustus suddenly takes me by the elbow and leads me away from the other stunned youth.
"I am a busy man, Reaper," he says, mocking the word. "So I will be direct. You have created complications in my life."
His touch makes me want to scream. His thin mouth emotes nothing. His nose is straight, his eyes contemptuous and made from the embers of a dying sun. So peerless. Yet he is not beautiful. His is a face carved from granite. Deep cheeks. Manly, tough skin. Not burnished like that of the fools on the HC, or the pixies who gallivant around the nightclubs. He reeks of power, like pinks reek of perfume. I want to make his face look like a broken puzzle. "Yes," is all I can say. He does not smirk or smile.
"My wife is a beggar. She pleaded with me to help her son win."
"Wait," He had help? I ask. His mouth slides into a soft smile, the sort reserved for simple amusements. I'm assuming you are not sharing my involvement with others.
I want to break him. After all that has happened, he expects my cooperation as though it is something due to him, as though it is his right that I help him.
I unclench my fists. What would Dancer have me say? You're fine, I manage. I can't help you on the domestic front, but I won't tell a soul that the Jackal had help from Daddy. His chin rises. Do not call him that name. The men of House Augustus are lions, not flea-bitten carrion-eaters. All the same, you should have put your money on Mustang, I say, intentionally not using her name. Don't tell me about my family, Darrow. He peers down his nose at me. Now, the question is how much you want for your silence. I accept no gifts. Owe no man, so you will be taken care of on one condition. I stay away from your daughter. No! He laughs sharply, surprising me. The foolish families worry over blood. I care nothing for purity of family or ancestry. That is a vain thing. I care only for strength, what a man can do to other men, women. And that is something you have. Power. Strength.
He leans closer, and in his pupils I see Io dying.
I have enemies. They are strong. They are many. They are Bellona. And others. But yes, Imperator Tiberius Au Bellona has more than 50 nieces and nephews. He has 9 children. That Goliath, Carnus, the eldest. Cassius, his favorite. His seed is strong. Mine is less so. I had a son worth all of Tiberius's put together, but Carnus killed him. He's silent for a moment. Now, I have 2 nieces, a nephew, a son, a daughter, and that is it. So I collect apprentices. My condition is this. I will give you what you want for your silence. I will buy you pinks, obsidians, greys, greens. I will sponsor your application to the academy, where you will learn to sail the ships that conquered the planets. I will provide you with funds and patronage requirements. I will introduce you to the sovereign. I will do all these things for your silence if you become one of my lancers, an aide-de-camp, a member of my household.
He asks me to betray my name, to set aside my family for his.
Mine is a false family, Andromedus, a family made for deception, yet some part of me aches.
I saw it coming, but I don't know what to say.
One of your son's soldiers might say something about your involvement, my lord. He snorts. I'm more concerned about your lieutenants. I laugh. Few of my army know the truth, and those that do will not say a word. So much trust.
I am their arch-primus. I say it simply.
Are you serious? He asks, in confusion, as though I misunderstand something as basic as gravity. Boy, allegiances crumble as soon as we board that shuttle. Some of your friends will be spirited away to the Moon Lords. Others will go to the governors of the Gas Giants. Even a few to Luna. They will remember you as a legend of their youth. But that is it. And that legend will brook no loyalty. I've stood where you stand. I won my year. But loyalty isn't found in these halls. It is the way things are. It is the way things were. I say harshly, surprising him. But I believe what I say. I am something different. I freed the enslaved and let the broken mend themselves. I gave them something you older generations can't understand.
He chuckles, irritating me.
That is the problem with youth, Darrow. You forget that every generation has thought the same.
But for my generation it is true. No matter his confidence, I am right. He is wrong. I am the spark that will set the worlds afire. I am the hammer that cracks the chains.
This school is not life, he recites to me. It is not life. Here you are king. In life there are no kings. There are many would-be kings, but we peerless lay them low. Many before you have won this game, and those many now excel beyond this school. So do not act as though when you graduate you will be king, you will have loyal subjects. You will not. You will need me. You will need a foundation, a supporter to help you rise. There can be none better for you than I.
It's not my family I would betray. It is my people. The school was one thing, but to go beneath the dragon's wing, to let him hug me close, to sit in luxury while my own sweat and die and starve and burn. It's enough to rip my heart out. Both his golden children watch us. So do Cassius and his father after they embrace one another. There are tears for Julian. I wish I were with my family instead of here. I wish I could feel Kieran's hand on my shoulder, feel Liana's hand in mine, as we watch Mother set dinner before us. That is a family. Love. These people are all about glory, victory, and family pride, yet they know nothing of love. Nothing of family. These are false families. They are just teams. Teams that play their game of pride. The arch-governor has not even said hello to his children. This vile man cares more to speak with me.
Funny, I say.
Funny? He asks darkly.
I make something up. Funny how a single word can change everything in your life.
It's not funny at all. Steel is power. Money is power. But of all the things in all the worlds, words are power.
I look at him for a moment. Words are a weapon stronger than he knows. And songs are even greater. The words wake the mind. The melody wakes the heart. I come from a people of song and dance. I don't need him to tell me the power of words. But I smile nonetheless.
What is your answer? Yes or no? I will not ask again.
I glance over at the dozens of peerless scarred who wait to have a word with me, no doubt to offer patronage or apprenticeships. Old Lorn Au Arcos is there. I recognize him even without his drafter's mask. The Rage Knight. The man who sent me my Pegasus and Dancer's Ring. A man of perfect honor and leader of the third most powerful house on Mars. A man I could learn from.
Will you rise with me?
I look at the arch-governor's jugular. His heartbeat is strong. I imagine the fading dirge when Io died. But when I hang him, he will not receive our song. His life will not echo. It will simply stop.
I think, my lord, that it would present some interesting opportunities.
I look up into his eyes, hoping he mistakes the fury there for excitement.
You know the words? He asks me.
I nod.
Then you must say them. Here. Now. So all may witness that I have claimed the best of the school.
His pride reeks. I grit my teeth and convince myself this is the right path. With him, I will rise. I will attend the academy. I will learn to lead fleets. I will win.
I will sharpen myself into a sword. I will give my soul. I will dive to hell in hopes of one day rising to freedom. I will sacrifice, and I will grow my legend and spread it amongst the peoples of all the worlds until I am fit to lead the armies that will break the chains of bondage, because I am not simply an agent of the Son of Ares. I am not simply a tactic or a device in Ares' schemes. I am the hope of my people, of all people in bondage. So I kneel before him, as is their way. And as is their way, he sets his hands upon my head. The words creep from my mouth, and their echo is like broken glass into my ears. I will forsake my father. I will abandon my name. I will be your sword. Nero au Augustus, I will make my purpose your glory. Those watching gasp at the sudden proclamation. Others curse at the impropriety, at the gall of Augustus. Does he have no sense of decency? My master kisses the top of my head and whispers their words, and I do my best to cage the fury that has made me a thing sharper than red, harder than gold. Darrow, Lancer of House Augustus, rise! There are duties for you to fill. Rise. There are honors for you to take. Rise for glory, for power, for conquest and dominion over lesser men. Rise, my son. Rise.
My love.
The End. You've been listening to Red Rising by Pierce Brown, narrated by Tim Gerard Reynolds and directed by Abigail McHugh. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Theft of Swords, Book 1 of the Reiria Revelations by Michael J. Sullivan, also narrated by Tim Gerard Reynolds. When they killed King Amrath of Melengar, they pinned the murder on two men. They couldn't have made a worse choice. Royce Melbourne, a skilled thief, and his mercenary partner, Hadrian Blackwater, make a profitable living carrying out dangerous assignments for conspiring nobles, until they are hired to pilfer a famed sword. What appears to be just a simple job finds them framed, and trapped in a conspiracy that uncovers a plot far greater than the mere overthrow of a tiny kingdom. Can a self-serving thief and an idealistic swordsman survive long enough to unravel the first part of an ancient mystery that has toppled kings and destroyed empires in order to keep a secret too terrible for the world to know? And so begins the first tale of Michael J. Sullivan's epic series of treachery and adventure, sword fighting and magic, ancient myth and legend. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.